We never called them pilgrimages. They were simply family trips or outings. Sometimes that's all they were. But sometimes they were much, much more. They were, in fact, pilgrimages, sacred travel, trips whose purpose and destination filled the occasion with a sense of goodness, joy, and blessedness. There were trips to my grandparents for Thanksgiving and Christmas and birthdays. Trips to something called the Cathedral of the Pines, an outdoor chapel in the mountains of New Hampshire. Trips to a favorite summer vacation spot. Trips to New England's holiest shrines. Fenway Park, Boston Gardens, Faneuil Hall. Trips that were guaranteed to lift one's spirit, renew one's hope, restore one's faith in the blessedness and holiness of life. Trips that were the center point of one's life and year and family. No doubt you have your own list of sacred trips and sacred destinations that have been cornerstones in your life, trips to people and places that held your life together no matter what else was going on or not going on. For Jesus and his ancestors, the temple in Jerusalem stood as such a landmark or linchpin. I was glad, sang the ancient Israelites, I was glad when they said, "Let us go up to the house of the Lord," and they looked forward to the blessed day when all nations would stream peacefully together into it. When Jesus was 8 years old, Mary and Joseph carried him in their arms to the temple. And when he was 12, he visited again, lingering behind to soak up all that he could from the esteemed teachers he found there. On Palm Sunday, he walked up the same road again, this time challenging both the money changers and the religious authorities in the temple. Nazareth and Galilee and Samaria were off Broadway for Jesus, but the temple was center stage for him and his country folk. And as long as the temple walls remained sturdy and upright, and its halls remained unsullied, unviolated, and sacrosanct, Israel's present and future were safe and assured no matter what. Regardless of whether the king was good or bad, arrogant or benign, competent or incompetent, just or unjust, as long as the temple remained in place, all was well. Regardless of whether Israel was strong and independent or weak, and under the rule of foreign powers, as long as the temple stood, there was nothing to fear. Regardless of whether people were religious-minded or not, as long as the temple was there to visit occasionally, their connection to God was secure. But if the temple were to fall or be destroyed, all was lost. Nothing could ever be the same again. Imagine then seeing Jesus standing next to the temple, soaring 90 feet into the air, declaring that not a single stone would remain standing. This is the Holy of Holies turned into the horror of horrors. But you and I do not have to transport ourselves 2,000 years back in time. We too have known the experience of watching our lives crumble and shatter in the blink of an eye. When a 14-year-old boy commits suicide, when a typhoon sweeps ashore in the Philippines, when a decades-long marriage falls apart, when city churches struggle to be faithful and are told it's not enough, when violence and abuse in our homes, our neighborhood, our world remain unchecked, when prejudice and bigotry go unchallenged, when disease and death cause loved ones to be taken away from us, the stability and certainty that form the center of our lives are suddenly and permanently eroded. Listen, Jesus said, there'll be wars, rebellions, earthquakes, famine, plagues, not because he's a prophet of doom, but because he's a realist, a truth teller. These kinds of things, he says, go on all the time. This is just what the world is like. At first glance, this passage may seem to be about Jesus' ability as a fortune teller of cataclysmic and unwanted events, but two factors argue against this interpretation. Before I go any further, though, I want to begin with a history lesson and three numbers. Here are the three numbers, 30, 70, 90. You need to remember those, so say them with me. 30, 70, 90. You got it? You ready? Here comes the history lesson. Jesus' death and resurrection, by most accounts, took place in the year 30. 40 years later, in the year, just as Jesus predicted, the temple was torn down by the Romans. However, Luke's gospel was written after the temple was destroyed, somewhere around the year, give or take, maybe a decade, but always understood as having been written after the fact. In other words, when Luke wrote about the temple being destroyed, it had already happened. And he was writing to people who knew it had already happened. People who were desperately trying to come to terms with life without the temple. Or to say it differently, Luke was not writing about an unknown future, but about an all too well known and unwanted present. These are not words to help us discern the future, but words to help us survive the perils and hardships of today. Jesus makes this clear with his own words about not getting distracted by people and events, but persevering and holding on, remaining steadfast, even when all hope seems gone. These are words to cling to like a life jacket whenever our world begins to come unglued. Our strength and our salvation, according to Jesus, lie not in the temple or any other building, however beautiful or fortified it may be, but in God alone. When the unimaginable happens to us, when our lives are turned upside down, when fear and terror are on the rise, when nothing seems safe or sure anymore, when the worst seems about to happen or maybe already has happened, don't give up, Jesus says. Don't man the lifeboats, don't run for the hills, don't crawl into a bunker or fetal position, but stay alert and resolute, for your redemption draws near. Wait for it. Watch for it, shouts the prophet Isaiah. What we want God to do is to restore our old, familiar, comfortable world, but God promises something else, something different, something more, something better. Behold, I'm about to create a new heaven and a new earth. No more shall the sound of weeping be heard. No more shall cries of distress be uttered. No more shall infants die in their mother's arms. No more shall the old ones fail to live a full and good life. No more shall your homes and gardens waste away, or your land and property be seized by others. No more shall your labors go unrewarded or unrecognized. No more shall you have to cry out to heaven for justice. For before you call, I will answer. And the wolf and the lamb shall feed side by side and live peaceably together. Isn't that a world worth waiting and watching for? May this ancient vision come soon. May it strengthen and sustain you until it does. And may your faithfulness to it guide your every action in the meanwhile.